Welcome everyone to another episode of the Dine Sports Podcast on the Dine Sports Podcast Network. We are officially back from our summer hiatus, ready to bring you guys more of the best storylines in sports going. Today, we've got special guest, friend of the show, Michaela Schreider, stopping by from TSN 1200 and the Mouchoir Podcast to talk all things WNBA and the playoffs. They have got their final weekend going down this weekend. Lots of playoff implications with every single game going on across the league. And we also do a brief recap of some of the storylines that have dominated this 2022 WNBA season, and there have been no shortage of them, to say the least. But before we get to her, want to tell you all about our friends over at SeatGeek. They will get you the best tickets around to live sporting events, concerts, special events, and more. Head over to SeatGeek.com and use the promo code DINESports, D-Y-N-E-S, sports with an S at the end of it. No space in between, all one word, DINESports, for $20 off your first purchase. So you can save a little do-re-mi while going to the game, concert, or special event that you were going to go to anyways. So help support the show, maybe even plan a little date night while you're at it with for your significant other there. SeatGeek.com, promo code DINESports for $20 off your first purchase. Without further ado, let's get right into it. Michaela Schreider to break down the WNBA season and upcoming playoffs. Joining us on the podcast today, we've got co-host of the She's Got Game show on TSN 1200, the one and only Michaela Schreider. How are you doing today?
I'm doing very well. Thank you for having me.
Anytime. It is an exciting time to be a fan of the WNBA right now, because there is a lot on the go. And I think we would be doing it a disservice if we didn't at least start off the top with just doing a wellness check on you. Your girl Sue Bird here, she's down to the final couple of games here. Any one of these in the playoff series could be her last playoffs. How are you doing as you're watching these last final games of her illustrious career?
Oh, I'm not doing well. Thank you for asking. I'm not being hyperbolic, and I know it sounds like I am, but it has been so amazing to watch and yet so heartbreaking at the same time, because, like, you know, every time she goes into a city in the last couple of weeks, it's been her last time in that city. Mm-hmm. And they've done a little farewell for her. So it's like watching her career end every night for the last couple of weeks. And, you know, her last home game in Seattle, which was last Sunday, was amazing to see, 18,000 fans, largest crowd for a women's basketball game in the state of Washington, largest crowd in Seattle Storm history. Like, so unbelievable to see all these people come out and support her at the same time. Like, I'm holding back tears as a grown woman watching this basketball game. She's just had such an amazing career, and she's done so much for the sport. And I think the attendance of that game spoke to that. You know, she helped them make history in her last game at home, her last regular season game at home. And that kind of is very emblematic of everything she's done for this league. You know, she's kind of a lot of people, I think, would call her the face of women's basketball at times. I think there's a number of other people who have kind of stepped into that role, but there was a period of time where, like, if you didn't know the WNBA, you probably at least knew who Sue Bird was. Mm-hmm. And, you know, everything she's done in terms of, like, statistics, you know, all-time leader in WNBA assists, four-time WNBA champion, five Olympic gold medals. Like, honestly, her track record, we could be here all day just talking about everything she's accomplished. And it's amazing to see her impact on the league as she goes through, but it's at the same time, it's so hard to watch. And I feel bad, because, like, I really have only been a fan for a couple of years. I got into the WNBA around 2018. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, because it was so hard even then to find WNBA games to watch, it's gotten a lot easier. There's still some gaps, but, like, I feel like as a fan, I missed out on so much of her career. And I think that's part of where my sadness comes from, is that I didn't get to watch, partly my fault because I just wasn't into the WNBA, but partly because it wasn't easy to just stumble upon in the early 2000s and even in the 2010s. So, like, I'm watching this knowing that we missed so much of, like, the peak of her career and some of the best moments. And I think that's what makes some of it a lot harder, but all in all, it's been bittersweet to watch these last few weeks.
Yeah, no, I can imagine. And, you know, you hit on some great points there as well, too, because you rewind even 5 years ago, like you were saying, it wasn't as easy as just buying WNBA League Pass and firing it up on your computer, which it's kind of crazy to think that in that 5-year gap, we've now gotten to the point where it's kind of similar to the men's packages where they actually have regional blackouts and all of that going on now, which would have been unheard
Equality.
Of. Exactly. There you go. So now the women's fans are also getting stuck to it on regional blackouts, just like the guys' side are. But I mean, Sue Bird, like you said, phenomenal career, and I'm sure you've probably seen it there, the little highlight of the little girl trying to give her the flowers on the sideline when she was trying to inbound the ball there and in her last home game. But
can you hold this for me?
Yeah, just take this here, middle of the game, no big deal. But it really does speak to the impact she's had on that game, where for a long period of time, not only are players who are in the league now admirers of hers, but that next generation of 6, 7, 8-year-old girls still really do look up to her. And I would be very interested to know what sort of her second act is going to be, because she doesn't strike me as a person who's going to sit at home and, you know, crochet until the day she dies, right? Like, she's, whether it's next year or maybe she takes a little time off and, you know, decompresses a little bit, but can you see her going in one particular direction or another? Like, do you see her being maybe the front office style? Do you see her getting into coaching? Like, if you had to guess, what do you think she does for her follow-up act when she does hang up her shoes?
I've got so many theories, some of which are substantiated and some of which are not. But I definitely think that I think something is in the works, because there was a tribute video that her former teammate Swin Cash narrated. I think it aired before her last home game. And Swin said something to the effect of, like, I know what's coming next, but I know I have to keep it secret. So my theory, again, completely unsubstantiated, is that like the day the WNBA season ends, or the day after, however it ends, there's going to be some sort of announcement about her signing a contract with likely ESPN or some sort of broadcaster. I think she is going to go into media. We saw her in the playoffs last year do some commentary during the finals with ESPN, and she was fantastic. Like, she was really, really good on the panel. We saw the Bird and Taurasi show during March Madness. I think we obviously have to wait for Diana Taurasi to retire for that to happen, but I definitely think media is going to be part of her future. And she's also kind of indicated that ownership is part of her future as well. She became a part owner of Gotham FC, which is New York's NWSL team, a couple of weeks ago that was announced. So she said something about sitting on the sidelines in Seattle. And I imagine that, you know, maybe whether it's the Seattle Storm or some other WNBA team, I think she'll go into ownership there as well. But yeah, it definitely seems like, fortunately for us, this isn't going to be the last time we see Sue Bird. I think she's going to be well involved in the game going forward. And, you know, she's really passionate about a lot of things outside of the game. You know, she does a lot of advocacy for LGBTQ+ rights, and she and Megan Rapinoe started something called Love is Uninterrupted, which is in support of trans rights. So I think that between her philanthropy and then, you know, ownership and media, I think we're going to be seeing a lot of Sue Bird, fortunately for people like me.
Yeah, exactly. And like you said too, the Sue and Diana show that was going on, like, we need that. As soon as Diana does call it a career, like, that would do wonders for the sport, because it was just entertainment. The content value alone was phenomenal, right? Like,
it really was.
So, I mean, that's kind of a nice segue to our friend Diana there and the Phoenix Mercury, who have had just, I don't even know how to phrase it. You can't really call it a train wreck. It's forces beyond their control. A lot of the things that are going on, obviously it's tough to really focus on a WNBA season when one of the centerpieces of your team is literally the entire story of this season, and that is Brittany Griner being detained in Russia. And we can get into the geopolitical ramifications of everything, but at the end of the day, really, it is a ploy by Russia to, she's a pawn in all of this. And, you know, we do hope that she obviously gets released, and whether it's a prisoner swap or whatever's in the works right now, people that are making far more money than you or I are making these decisions here. But obviously, the Phoenix Mercury, they've had a lot of distractions this year. And it wasn't helped by the fact that you look at Kia Nurse coming off knee surgery, so she hasn't been healthy. The Tina Charles contract divorce. Diana with her quad injury. I mean, she pretty much played the last game against Sue Bird, which I don't think she would have missed for the entire world, and then kind of shut her down from there. Like, what has been your take as just a fan of the league, seeing all of this kind of unfold down there in the desert this season?
Yeah, it's been, it's so important to mention that context, because, you know, externally looking in at the Phoenix Mercury, if we put aside the Brittany Griner situation for a second, and I know that's, you know, impossible to do, like if we didn't know about that, you would look at this team and go, what is going on there? Mm-hmm. Right? Like there was the Tina Charles exit, which looked really suspicious. And there was clearly some sort of fit issue there. There's been fighting on the sidelines between Diana Taurasi and Skylar Diggins-Smith. And obviously that happens on teams, but there's been this sign of like a lot of tensions happening with Phoenix Mercury. And then you actually consider the fact that, like, you know, one of their teammates is wrongfully detained in Russia right now. They don't know how she's doing or you know, if she's safe and comfortable and all that stuff. And mm-hmm. I think what we're seeing is just like that impact weighing on the minds of these players. And, you know, it was announced earlier this week that Skylar Diggins-Smith will miss the rest of the season. And there's a lot of, all they said was personal reasons. We don't really know what's going on. She deleted her Twitter account. And, you know, it was about a week ago that she gave a very impassioned post-game press conference where she mentioned, you know, the impact that the Brittany Griner news of her being sentenced to 9 years in prison mm-hmm. had on their team. And you just think, like, you know, how is Skylar Diggins-Smith doing mentally right now? And there's just so much behind the scenes that I don't think we could even comprehend. The fact that they're one, so right now there's two playoff spots left. There's four teams fighting for it. The fact that the Phoenix Mercury are one of those four teams is pretty shocking when you consider the season they've had off the court. Mm-hmm. And that there were times earlier in the season where it looked like this team was going to be fighting for a first overall pick and not a playoff spot. But they've managed to hold it together and at least be in the running for the playoffs. We'll see what happens this weekend. But yeah, it's been such a difficult season. And then I think when you really take into perspective the Brittany Griner situation, it kind of makes a lot of sense. Like this kind of thing has ripple effects and missing one of your teammates for the reasons that Brittany Griner is gone, it weighs heavily on these players' minds. And I think that's kind of what we're seeing play out.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, hopefully the Brittany Griner situation resolves itself sooner rather than later. And, you know, however that comes about, that we'll let Biden and his administration kind of deal with that there. But like you said, there's so many subplots going on that I would be shocked if, you know, 5 years down the line, we don't have some sort of, you know, ESPN 30 for 30 or something just about this, yeah, you know, 2022 Phoenix Mercury season. Cause there's the injuries, the, you know, Diana, she was always probably going to try and outlast Sue Bird. Cause that's just the competitor that she is. She would want to have that one extra season on her there, but like, yeah, she's coming to the tail end of her career, the infighting, the, you know, contract divorces. There's just so much going on. And here you are, two games left in the regular season, and somehow, miraculously, they have the same record as the other four teams who are still mathematically in it there as well. So a lot going on in the desert for sure. But if we look at the playoff picture right now, so you've got Las Vegas, Chicago, Connecticut, Seattle, Washington, and Dallas. They've all clinched. So they're playing. There's still some jockeying for seeding going on, but they're through. Then you've got Minnesota, Atlanta, New York, and Phoenix, all with 14 and 20 records. So if we look at those four, and, you know, Sunday, we'll know the answer. WNBA playoffs kicking off next week there. But out of those four, if you had to guess today, like, who are the two that get in?
It's such a good question, because the schedule this weekend makes it all the more interesting. Like, on paper, my two, and I said this on She's Got Game this week, my two teams to make the playoffs out of those four are the New York Liberty and the Minnesota Lynx. I think that with everything Sabrina Ionescu is doing in New York, like, it just feels like every night she's breaking some record or making history in some way. And at times, like, let's be honest, carrying that team. And they do have a lot of really talented young players. They've got Mikaela Onyemere, who won Rookie of the Year last year. They've got Dee Dee Richards. They've got this amazing core of young players who are slowly starting to come into their own. And then they've got Sabrina Ionescu, who's finally kind of become the star that we've all been waiting for her to become. And I just feel like, you know, you give her the challenge of winning a couple of games this weekend to make the playoffs. I feel like she's going to help her team do that. And then the Minnesota Lynx, because they, much like the Seattle Storm, have some added incentive to at least end this season on a high note in some way, because they're saying farewell to Sylvia Fowles. Minnesota, however, does have it tough this weekend. They play Seattle on Friday night. Seattle still needs to clinch that fourth spot, or the seeding is still, like you said, being worked out. So Seattle's got some incentive to win this game, and obviously Minnesota needs to win to stay in the running for the playoffs. And I think that'd be tough. Whereas New York is facing Atlanta, one of the other teams in the running for the playoffs, and I think that they've got back to backs against Atlanta this weekend. That's their schedule. So when you're playing kind of with your fate in your own hands, you have an opportunity to not only get some points for yourself, but take some points away from one of your competitors right now. I feel like New York is in a better position to do that. Whereas Minnesota's got to play Seattle and then Connecticut, both already clinched playoff spots, both kind of middle of the pack, but still, two of the better teams in the league. So those are my picks, but I do think that Minnesota's got a tougher road ahead for that, grabbing those one of those spots.
Out of those four teams, those were the two that I was going to pick as well too. And as much as I would love to see Phoenix get in there, and all you have to do is qualify for the playoffs and anything can happen, but I just think they've got too much working against them. And as you said, they shut down Diana, they shut down Skyler, so it just kind of seems like they're ready to throw it into neutral and let's get this season over with and get to the off season here and try and regroup, because this was a team that really did have championship aspirations preseason before the whole Brittany Griner thing, and the season kind of got away from them there. So I don't see them doing it. As you mentioned, New York kind of controls their own destiny. And of those four teams, at least on paper, I think Minnesota is probably the strongest of those four. So yeah, I think it's going to be New York and Minnesota. Could be wrong. Atlanta could surprise us here and go out and win the games. And like you said, while New York controls their destiny, so does Atlanta too, right? And Ryan is doing a phenomenal job. I think she's hit the ground running as that number one overall pick and has really adapted to the WNBA pretty well and helped turn that franchise around. But it really is going to be action-packed WNBA weekend. So if you're a fan of this league, these next two games, Friday and Sunday, are going to be absolutely huge. So I don't think the league could have dreamt up a better kind of ending scenario with so many teams still in the running and still playing meaningful basketball deep into the summer like this.
Absolutely. It makes it so exciting. And it is like, the one thing the WNBA really has going for it is that their season runs during a time where, the NBA is not on, the NFL is not on yet. I know we're getting into preseason, the NHL is not on. It is kind of like a quieter time in the sports world. Yeah. I know there's also a lot of tennis and golf and stuff like that, but heading into an August weekend like this with so much exciting basketball and the playoffs haven't even started yet. Like, I think this is where, if marketed correctly, the WNBA could really capitalize on this.
I want to go back real quick to Sabrina Ionescu, who we were talking about, and the progress that she's made. And she has always been sort of marketed as a star, even going back to her college days and all of that. And there's a reason why New York was so thrilled to get her, because mega market like New York plus a bankable star like Sabrina, and it's kind of a match made in heaven. And I kind of liken it going back to, when Steph Curry was really starting to come into his own and getting the MVPs and winning the championships and all that in the NBA, how he kind of revolutionized the game where everyone wanted to all of a sudden start taking three-pointers from the parking lot. Like, that was the cool thing to do, right? Whereas with Sabrina and the success that she's had as essentially like a triple-double machine, like, tied the record until Candace Parker went out there and got one more to get ahead of her there. But like, that style of game, do you see as kind of a similar effect on the women's game as far as that next generation of kids that are coming up and looking towards like, oh, I want to emulate a more well-rounded game rather than just being, a pass first guard. I want to be contributing in multiple categories. Do you think there's going to be kind of a correlation between the two as she's starting to come into her own in the WNBA?
I think so. I think much like most sports leagues, there is a ripple effect when you see someone have success, and that's just it. Like, Sabrina Ionescu is setting records for triple doubles because this wasn't really a style of game that was popular. When the WNBA was in the first 25 years, essentially, of the WNBA, it was, you were either a Diana Taurasi, a shoot first, or you were a Sue Bird, a pass first. And obviously there's other, players to mention, but there were kind of boxes that we kept players in terms of style of play, and they adopted them. And now, like you said, you've got Sabrina Ionescu is coming in, who does it all. And she does the three pointers really well. She does play. She's a great playmaker. And I feel like, because she is kind of becoming part of the next generation of this league and being marketed very heavily as the, you know, from when she was drafted, she was kind of the next one, right? I think that, you know, it's a copycat league in many ways. And I think you will start to see those styles adopted. You know, we may not see it right away, but as the kids who are watching her right now come up through college, we're probably going to see more of that. And I think you can make a case that, like, you know, with Caitlin Clark and Paige Beckers and Aaliyah Boston in particular, who is great offensively and defensively, mm-hmm. we're already starting to see that more complete game be popular at the college level. So yeah, I think that's going to start to trickle up for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, you kind of stole my thunder a little bit there, but it was Paige that I was going to bring up next, right? Like that's sort of that next one of that isn't just a guard who is only going to shoot or only going to pass and let the bigs get the rebounds. Like she crashes boards, she full, you know, defense, offense, everything in between, plays a good transition game, racks up steals. Like she's a complete player. And we are starting to see that come through more and more, even in the college ranks. Now, unfortunately, for those that might not have heard, in a pickup game over the summer, our friend Paige blew out her ACL. So we won't actually even get to see her with UConn this season. But how much do you think that is going to really affect her draft stock for the WNBA, given the fact that we've kind of got a pretty good track record of what she's capable of doing? Is she still pretty much a lock for the top three, or do you think she could maybe slide a little bit just because she's going to have that full year off away from the college game?
Yeah, it's tough, especially coming into her junior year, right? And you know, her sophomore year was cut short by injury. She missed roughly the first half of it. And now to miss an entire season, like, I don't want to say it's going to hurt her, because we still have another year to determine that afterwards. And hopefully she can come back stronger. And, you know, knowing what we know about her, she's a very driven young woman. And, you know, hopefully she can come back and continue to prove why she's one of the greatest in the college game right now. But it is going to hurt, right? Like an entire year of not having her in the headlines and on the court and, you know, progressing her game. How can that not have an impact, really? But I'm a little, I don't want to say comforted, but like, you know, Sue Bird did tear her ACL in her freshman year at UConn as well and missed most of the season. So I remain hopeful that hopefully Paige Beckers, I know this is a little later, but hopefully Paige Beckers can recover from this. And I think what's going to happen is you're going to see more attention given to, you know, Caitlin Clark, who, while not playing on as well known of a team with Iowa, mm-hmm. I think she was the better player last year. I think she really proved herself as, we should be talking about Caitlin Clark the same way we're talking about Paige Beckers. And she's doing it, I would argue, with less of a supporting cast. And Aaliyah Boston really took over last year as well. And as much, again, as much fun as she is to watch, like, she's on South Carolina with a really great team around her, one of the best coaches in the game and Dawn Staley. And not to take anything away from her game, but Caitlin Clark's over here in Iowa doing it with very little support. And I think that maybe the silver lining to come out of all this is that players like Caitlin Clark get a little more airtime, because I think that's a great thing, because we should really be talking about Caitlin Clark. She's fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. It's always nice when you get I mean, it's funny to say that Iowa is a smaller school, but I mean, Iowa in basketball is a smaller school, right? They're a football school on the men's side there, but very rarely do you see, especially over the women's side of the basketball, that Iowa is producing kind of that next level of pro player. But she's absolutely phenomenal and just a walking bucket wherever she goes.
Honestly.
Right? As you said, much less of a supporting cast, not only with the people around her on the floor, but not to take anything away from the coaching staff over there. But, you know, they're no Geno and they're no Dawn Staley and, you know, the deep pocketed programs that South Carolina and UConn have going on. So she's definitely a name to watch out for sure. But yeah, it's a really exciting time, especially even at the college ranks there for women's basketball going forward, because there's so much talent coming out of college to the point where, you know, we had several WNBA players even saying, like, we're at a point where the WNBA really does need a G League, right? Because they've got so many of these veteran players who are locks for roster spots. And, you know, you've got top draft picks coming out who they're not going to get a ton of playing time. So they're either buried on the bench and their development kind of gets stunted that way, or they just get released, right? Like the Minnesota Lynx had to release one of the rookies of the year within the last 3 years. And you know, that's just a reality of the WNBA, because there's nowhere to stash that person. So do you think that's kind of the next progression? Like, putting aside, obviously you would love to have bigger TV deals and the marketing side and all of that, but aside from someone coming forward and just writing a blank check and increasing revenues that way, like, is that the biggest hurdle that the WNBA currently faces in your mind?
Yeah, I think it's definitely up there. And I think, you know, whether it's a G League, you know, a developmental league of some sort, or expansion, I think is what we really need. And I know that Kathy Engelberg, the commissioner of the WNBA, has talked about, sounds like in the next couple of years, we'll probably see two new teams added, and fingers crossed, one of them is Toronto. It looks like the Bay Area is going to get one. And mm-hmm. I've heard a few other cities kind of thrown in there as well. But I feel like those conversations are happening behind the scenes. And I said this last year, I think it was around the WNBA playoffs, Drake tweeted or shared on Instagram, you know, get me a WNBA team in Toronto. And like, you're telling me that Drake isn't going to be part of the funding of whatever WNBA team does come to Toronto. And I don't think he puts that out there if there's not something going on behind the scenes. Sue Bird has also talked about Toronto being one of the cities. And again, I don't think she puts that out there if there's not some serious weight behind it. So I remain hopeful that expansion will help that. Obviously, that's still only two teams that we're growing by. But that would be, you know, there's 24 roster spots right there that would be opened up. And then, yeah, I feel like a developmental league of some sort would go a long way, because, you know, these players get drafted, they come out of college, they get drafted. And then if they don't make the cut, because there's only so many roster spots, mm-hmm. where do they go? They go to Europe, they go to hopefully not Russia anymore. But there's, you know, it's so long have we seen these players, whether it's in the off season or because they don't make the main rosters, they have to travel elsewhere to play, and they make more money doing that. And if the WNBA isn't careful, they're going to start to lose some of their star players to some of these, you know, overseas teams, because they can make more money there. I do agree. That's probably one of the biggest challenges right now the WNBA faces. I think the other one is just like, you know, they need more coverage. They need more, they need to make games. This year, I feel like a lot of progress was made. There were more games on ABC. There were more games on the main ESPN channel. And we saw the numbers back that up. Every time that happened, the viewership was through the roof. So we just need more of that. And you know, League Pass has its issues, and obviously they need to work those out. But if they can just make the games easier to watch, especially for those of us who want to watch them, and then also easier to stumble upon for those who may not know that they're on. I've always been a big advocate for the fact that women's sports you need to be able to stumble upon it easier, because not everyone's going to be seeking it out, right? How often do you just turn on the TV on a Thursday night and a Sens game's on? We need more of that in women's sports, in particular the WNBA. And that just comes from like more exposure on main networks and more highlight packages on, you know, SportsCenter and any other highlight show. Like, that's how you get more people into the game. So I think if we could just see a little bit more of that as well, it would go a long way.
Yeah. Well, you even compare it to the men's summer league that just wrapped up with the top draft picks of the NBA, and the WNBA numbers were crushing those, right? And yet here you have all the major networks that are tripping over themselves to throw money at the NBA to broadcast the summer league games. And, you know, the numbers don't back it up. So hopefully someone, at least in this offseason, kind of takes a hard look at that and goes like, huh, all right, do we really need the, you know, guys that aren't going to make the Utah Jazz roster playing against the Dallas Mavericks scrubs on our primetime slot? Or can we maybe get, you know, a marquee WNBA matchup in there instead? And frankly, just probably end up paying a little bit less for it in terms of the actual money to actually get that deal done to bring in more eyeballs. Like, it just makes almost too much sense. I'm not sure why, you know, you and I sitting here can see that as such an easy solution, whereas these guys that are getting paid millions of dollars to work for ESPN and all that are, like we say, just throwing money at the NBA of just give us whatever footage you can type thing, right?
Exactly. They should be listening to us, Kyle.
Absolutely. So there you go. We need ESPN syndication on this podcast, apparently. then we're laughing. But one last thing I wanted to sort of touch on here before we got back into the playoffs, just in terms of the storylines, is you want to talk about bizarre storylines here. We got to bring up our friend Liz Cambage and the disaster that was the LA Sparks experience out there. She has had, if you were her publicist over the last 365 days, you've probably lost some sleep and some hair at this point, because she has had an interesting last year, to say the least. Everything from with the Australian national team, the fiasco that went on against the Nigerian team, and then just even clashing with teammates. And I mean, like, it was her old Dallas coach that got put in after Derek Fisher got taken out with the Sparks. And this was someone who she said was a driving force for why she came back to the WNBA. Like, in what you've read and sort of observed about this whole saga this season, like, what was your takeaway for why it didn't work? And do you think we'll ever see Liz Cambage back in the WNBA again?
I don't know, man. It, what a wild story. It just seems like wherever Liz Cambage goes, chaos follows, right? Yeah. We call her on the show the walking headline, because no matter where she's playing, there always seems to be some sort of controversy. And there comes a point where you have to look around and go, is it me? Am I the drama? And I think Liz might be the drama. Like, yeah. I hate to, you know, I know nothing about her. I know nothing about what's happening behind the scenes. And there could be a lot more to it than what we're reading. But it just seems like wherever she goes, there's always some sort of character issue with the other people in the room. And the Australian national team has made no bones about it, that they do not care to have her back. And yeah, that it, like, she was the problem in the room. It seems like a similar situation probably happened in LA. You know, when she was with Las Vegas last year, Becky Hammon comes in, signs this massive contract. And then the next day, Liz Cambage is tweeting about how, you know, criticizing the WNBA for signing this massive contract and not paying its players enough. And while I think she does have a point, is calling out your new head coach really the best way to go about that publicly? And unsurprisingly, she was not a member of the Las Vegas Aces shortly after that. And I just think, like, again, only knowing what I know in the headlines, it seems like the WNBA will probably just walk away at this point. It seems like wherever she goes, there's just no good news stories. She clearly has care. She has a problem connecting with people in the dressing room. And all signs point to the fact that it may not be the people around her who are the problem. So whatever it is that's causing that, like, you know, if she needs some sort of help or support, I hope she gets it. But I think she's burned these bridges. And I don't think any team is going to look at what they've seen in the headlines for the last couple of years and go, yeah, you know what, we could really use that.
Yeah.
So it sounds like, you know, there's, like I said, the European leagues, the Australian league, I know she's gone to play, and maybe that's where Liz Cambage goes next.
Yeah. We might see her pop up in China or something like that. Yeah. But like you said, there's only a certain number of bridges you can burn behind you before finally you're kind of stuck on an island out there. And
yeah,
you know, it's kind of the same thing as our friend Antonio Brown in the NFL. Like, there's only so many drama, and you know, it's their fault, or I wasn't in the right situation, or excuses you can kind of come up with before you got to take a long, hard look in the mirror and go, yeah, I probably could still be playing in that league if I had of maybe played nicer with others or whatever. Mm-hmm. And not to speculate on what's going on between the 6 inches between her ears or anything like that. But as you said, hopefully she does get some help if she does need it. But to your point about, you know, the Becky Hammon situation, same thing. I agree, right? The WNBA should be paying its players more. But in that same lens, you should also be then celebrating that for the first time in WNBA history, a woman signed $1 million contract, right? Like, mm-hmm. You got to realize that high tide is going to raise all boats eventually. So if, you know, they're going to start handing out these kind of contracts, there will be trickle down effects, right? It's not going to be, wow, the coaches are now making millions of dollars and we're going to pay all the players less, right? Like, it should be going in that direction. So how she kind of failed to connect those dots is kind of telling as to, you know, maybe the state of mind she was in when she was out there in Las Vegas as well too.
Yeah, that's just it. And it, you know, it, but the Becky Hammon signing was so huge for the WNBA, and I think such a great news opportunity, because how many NBA fans had watched Becky Hammon in San Antonio for so long? You know, we all heard the headlines every time a team interviewed her. And now she's finally said, screw it, I'm going to a team that's actually going to hire me as head coach. And now how many NBA fans may be paying a little more attention to the WNBA as a result, right? Like, it was a great opportunity, I think, for the league. She's obviously done a fantastic job in Las Vegas. to look at that and find something negative, again, probably says more about the person saying it than the situation.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, just look at the results already, right? Las Vegas in first place. They're looking like the favorite to win it all this year. They're in a good spot, and you've got to give Becky Hammon a lot of credit there because, mm-hmm. again, losing, as much of a distraction as she might have been, Liz Cambage was still a hell of a basketball player when she was with the Las Vegas Aces, and kind of saw her play decline when she moved out to Los Angeles a little bit. But at the end of the day, that's not an insignificant roster loss that team went through, and they have hit the ground absolutely running. And so kudos to Becky Hammon and the phenomenal first year that she's had out there with the Las Vegas Aces. So that brings us to the all-encompassing playoffs here, which, before we get your prediction on who you think is going to be hoisting the trophy when all is said and done, just wanted to touch on the fact that they did switch the format this year. So rather than it being the single game eliminations that we saw last year that people had some mixed emotions about, we're going to see 3-game series, 5-game series, 5-game series. So are you happy that they've gone back to this? Were you a fan of the single game elimination? Do you think they should go to straight 7-game series? Where do you fall on that spectrum as far as the actual format of the playoffs?
I was a big fan of the change because like many people last year, I wanted more of what we saw, right? We got one game of Seattle versus Phoenix, which at the time could have been Sue Bird's last game. Mm-hmm. And you know, that whole rivalry, Sue Bird versus Diana Taurasi, they've met so many times in the playoffs. We deserved more than one game of that. And so I was a big fan of anytime there's more WNBA games, I think it's a great thing. And I think this expansion is just part of that. And I do like single game eliminations in other sports when the playoffs, you know, like you look at it in baseball, the wild card game, it's a great way to start the playoffs. It's so exciting, but there's also more teams. There's more, like the playoffs go on longer because then you get into eventually 7-game eliminations. So I think it makes sense in that sport. But when you're looking at the WNBA, who already, you know, like we said, they have a short enough roster of teams, and you know, they only get up to 5-game eliminations even in the finals, I think it's important to expand that wherever you can, and I think more games is always a good thing. So I'd like to see further progression into 7 games eventually. I think that would be super exciting. I think it's a format people are more familiar with, and when you're trying to grow the game and the league, I think it's great to match people where they are and to, you know, give them what they're kind of familiar with. I think when they get more teams, that will also be a lot easier, right? And whether it's expansion of the actual playoff teams and spots themselves, I think that taking it to, you know, just adding more games gives us so much more to watch and so much more to market. I think this was a great decision.
Yeah, absolutely. And I wasn't a fan of the single game eliminations last year either. And, you know, you just work so hard all season to, oh, well, our best player just had an off shooting night tonight and now we're eliminated, right? Like Chicago, perfect example of, they just got hot at the right time and suddenly they were in the finals and they won the whole thing, right? And maybe if it was a 5-game series in that first round matchup, you could make an argument that maybe they don't win the championship last year. But anyways, all that to say is, they're moving in the right direction, and there probably are some, you know, scheduling concerns where they don't want to kind of overlap with the actual start of the NBA, so they can only go so deep into, you know, September and October and all of that there. But there's definitely enough wiggle room that maybe if they just bump up the start of the season, you know, a couple of weeks, then suddenly it is full round series of 7 games all the way throughout, which would be more familiar to the casual sports fan.
Yeah, exactly. And there's also a lot of promotion opportunities too, if they do overlap with the NBA season. You know, opening night of the NBA, you could promote, you know, Game 5 between Washington and Seattle tomorrow night or whatever. Like, there's a lot of opportunities there, I think, that overlapping could probably provide. And with how close these two leagues are, I think that's a great, opportunity for the WNBA.
Yeah. All right. So that brings us to the penultimate question here of, if you are to make a prediction on how these WNBA playoffs are going to unfold today, how do you see them going? Who's hoisting the trophy at the end of this year's playoff run?
Oh my goodness. Okay. So obviously I'm a Seattle Storm fan, and the ideal situation for me is that Sue Bird wins a championship and walks off into the sunset.
Yeah.
That is what I hope.
Okay, we'll allow you a homer pick, and then we'll allow you
a realistic pick
or whatever you want to call it there. a head and a heart pick, we'll call them.
There you go. So that's my heart pick, obviously. If that can't happen, I hope that whatever, what however the playoffs end up playing out, that we have a best on best final in Las Vegas and Chicago. These are the two top teams in the league. They've gone back and forth for first overall. They technically have an identical record. They're both also like finishing the season really hot. Las Vegas is 7-3 in their last 10. Chicago is 6-4. Like, they are almost identical in the way the season has played out for them. And I think it's a great story either way, right? Chicago wins. They're back-to-back champions. We saw how much the city of Chicago supported the Sky last year. It'd be great to build on that. I think they probably, you know, their season tickets probably went up. They have built a more of a fan base after that. And to win a championship again will just further build on that. And then if Las Vegas wins, well, then it's like, you know, this team that Las Vegas has been such a great team for so long. And I feel like they've been in the conversation or in the finals or just almost right there so many times in the last couple of years. To see them finally get it would be amazing. To see Becky Hammond get a championship in her first year would be fantastic. And just, you know, and not to take anything away from Becky Hammond, because they were a good team when she came in, but she got the most out of some players that this team didn't use properly in previous years. Like Kelsey Plum is a prime example of that. She went from sixth woman of the year last year to, like, at times in talks for MVP this year. She's just had a fantastic year. Asia Wilson, I think, is like, if it's not Breonna Stewart, it's going to be Asia Wilson for the actual MVP on the season. And then Jackie Young has also had this breakout season. So she's taken players who I think were just on the cusp of really breaking through to greatness, and she's given them the opportunity to do exactly that. I think she deserves a lot of credit for that. But either way, I think that would be such an entertaining series. Hopefully it goes the full distance in all five games. And then no matter what, you've got a great story with whoever wins that championship. So Las Vegas, Chicago final, I think, is my head pick.
Okay. Now. So then is it Parker or Wilson that ends up coming out on top if it does go the full game five?
That's the thing. Cause it's like, oh, whoever got hot, and they're both hot right now. Yeah. I would give the slight edge to Las Vegas. Okay. And you know, if you know, gun to my head, I have to pick, I would go with Las Vegas. I could see it going either way. It's a bit of a coin flip with these two teams. But I would give a slight edge to Las Vegas just because they've been like, Asia Wilson has taken this team to the finals late in the playoffs so many times and just hasn't been able to break through in the last couple of years anyway. I think that she would be, you know, incredibly motivated to finally make that happen. And now with Kelsey Plum and Jackie Young playing as well as they are, it's hard to see even the Chicago Sky. It's hard to see a team stopping them. So I'd give the slight edge to Vegas.
There you go. You went back and forth in your head, but we know in your heart who you're pulling for these playoffs there. So
absolutely.
Michaela, thank you so much for taking the time to sit down with us. For those that are listening that want to check out any of the podcast work that you've got going on or any of the other projects you have, where are the best places to find you these days?
Yeah, for sure. You can find me on Twitter at Schreids, Schreids. And I share pretty much everything I'm doing there, but you can listen to She's Got Game on your local TSN radio station, TSN 1200 here in Ottawa. I also have the Mouchoir podcast about the Ottawa Redblacks, if you are a CFL fan. So you can find that at Mouchoir podcast on Twitter and Instagram and wherever you get your podcasts. And that's pretty much it.
Amazing. Well, we appreciate you stopping by, and hopefully it'll be a jam-packed weekend full of exciting finishes. We'll figure out who's playing who. Hopefully Sue Bird gets home court advantage when all is said and done, so that those Seattle Storm fans get as many home games of Sue Bird left down the road as she's got left in her career there.
Absolutely. From your lips, my friend, I hope that's what we see. Thank you so much for having me. I always enjoy being on the show, and it's always fun to talk WNBA. So thanks so much.
And that's a wrap for another episode of the Dine Sports Podcast on the Dine Sports Podcast Network. As always, a huge thank you goes out to our guests today, Michaela Schreider from TSN 1200. She's Got Game, as well as the Mouchoir Podcast, a CFL Red Black Experience. Be sure to check out both of those platforms for more of her great content. While you're at it, be sure to head over to dinespressbox.com. We've got amazing content coming out daily. Tons of videos, sports analysis, breaking stories, news, stuff to help you with fantasy leagues, sports card talk, everything that has to do with the world of sports available in one place, dinespressbox.com. Be sure to check it out today. Now that we are back up and running, we've got more great guests coming your way, so stay tuned for that. Until then, stay safe, everyone. We'll see you in a bit.